Hoover broke with the president for the first time when Harry Truman became the commander in chief, because Harry Truman didn't actually know a lot about what was going on in the government when he became president, because FDR hadn't bothered to share information like we have an atomic bomb with Harry Truman. But he was a quick study. He was a man of, you know, he had strong opinions, even if he had the facts underlying them. Anyway, he became strongly convinced that Hoover was running, in his words, President Truman's words, an American Gestapo. And he said so publicly, and he said so more than once, and J. Edgar Hoover didn't like that one bit. Particularly because Hoover had discovered correctly, although 12 or 13 years after the fact, that there were Soviet spies in Germany. In fact, there had been Soviet spies running around at least since the United States had recognized Soviet Russia in 1933, where there are embassies, there are spies. So Hoover began to get wind of this. There were traces of evidence showed up. The British had a few traces. We had a few traces. But by the time Hoover became convinced that there was, to quote his protege, Mulcahy, Senator Joseph McCarthy, a conspiracy so immense that it stole the secrets for the atomic bomb and the nuclear bomb, and it burrowed its way into the State Department, Dr. Hiss, the Pentagon, the CIA, the former Kim Philby, and his friends, and even into the Justice Department and the FBI, case of the Soviet agent, Judith Copeland. They'd gotten pretty deep and had a 15, 20-year head start. Truman didn't buy this at all. But Hoover was right. And Hoover broke with the President of the United States, broke publicly in testimony to Congress in 1947. And there was a freshman congressman who asked Hoover lots of great questions that had been fed to him by the FBI, and that congressman was?
Joseph McCarthy.
No, congressman, not senator. Freshman congressman, California.
Wisconsin.
Richard Milhouse Nixon, thank you very much. We have a winner. The Bureau had, you know, liaisons with Congress. They had fed Nixon brilliant questions. Hoover was pleased to answer them, and he got up after this testimony in which he'd broken with the President of the United States and declared himself the leader of American anti-communism. And said, "Who's with me?" Everybody was with him. And he asked a friend who'd come with him to testify, "Who's that young man up there?" And his friend said, "Well, that's Richard M. Nixon." He said, "He's going to be a good man for us." He was. I'm going to skip ahead. Hoover and his liaisons with Congress, when Nixon was in Congress and the Senate, and with the White House, when Nixon was vice president, educated this callow man. And they read him into the secrets of American espionage. Remember that the FBI, from its inception, throughout its history, and first and foremost today, is an intelligence service. It's not a law enforcement service. Anybody can investigate a bank robbery, stolen car. Okay. The FBI exists as an instrument of presidential power, as a secret intelligence organization doing espionage and counter-espionage in the name of national security. When Nixon finally comes to office, Lyndon Johnson, when Nixon was president-elect in December 1968, Lyndon Johnson, who had relied on Hoover from the day he took office, who relied on Hoover to prosecute and persecute his enemies on the left. And, importantly, before the 1964 presidential election, when Johnson, unelected, usurper in the eyes of the Democratic Party, Shakespearean drama after the assassination of President Kennedy, needs to win office in his own right. He has banished Bobby Kennedy from the Justice Department. He needs to win the South. He he needs to win the entire United. He's Lyndon Johnson. He needs to win 51 states. He needs to win the entire South, and he wants to pass the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, which Kennedy had never got through Congress. And he decides after the murders of the civil rights worker and killing significantly two white civil rights workers in Mississippi that he needs to show that he's not a Southern racist. So he goes to Jay Groover, calls him up and says, Edgar, I want you to get the same intelligence on the Klan that you got on the communists. I know what you got on the communists. I was up to 1 o'clock in the morning reading this. This is all on tape, by the way. Because Lyndon Johnson taped his phone calls. God bless him. And you can, if you happen to be on the internet, go to the Lyndon Johnson Library. All of this is on tape. It's clear as a bell. You can hear it at home. That's your cup of tea. And Edgar Hoover didn't want to crush the Ku Klux Klan. He thought that the problem in the South and the Civil Rights Movement wasn't segregationists, it's what he called the integrationists. Okay, it was the blacks and their white communist sympathizer friends. But Hoover did not disobey lawful orders from presidents. And he said, yes, sir, Mr. President, I'll get right on it. And he did. And he crushed the Klan like a dry twig in the course of 3 years. They helped Lyndon Johnson win to keep power. When Lyndon Johnson gave up his powers, he wouldn't run for re-election. When Nixon won, a squeaker, he called Richard Nixon to the White House in 68, and he had one piece of advice for him. Well, two pieces. The first was, listen, the Pentagon has this place wired for sound. You can't make a telephone call without the National Security Agency listening on. So be careful what you say on the telephone. A little light bulb goes on in Nixon's head. The second thing he said was, there's one man in this government that you can depend on to keep secrets and to stop the leaks, because the leaks will kill you. And that's J. Edgar Hoover. There's only one man in the government who will be loyal to you. That's J. Edgar Hoover. Remember. The FBI is supposed to be a tool of the president. It's supposed to be the president's domestic intelligence service. There's only one person who's pulled this back into balance. It's kind of like it. The FBI is a very hierarchical organization. It runs like the Marines. Top down. Anybody here ever served in the Marines? Yeah, I thought not. neither have I. If you're a lieutenant and you're in combat, and you're a Marine commander, and you send your people up the hill, you go up the goddamn hill. You get loyalty up and loyalty down. And it helps that by accident, George W. Bush chose Robert Swan Mueller III to be his FBI director. He took office, God help him, on 4 September 2001. He's still the FBI director. And he's going to serve 12 years, 2 years past his legal term of office. And this guy's great. And nobody ever talks about him, nobody ever. He's kind of the secret hero of this book. He's a presence in it through the last fifth. This is a guy, Robert Swan Mueller III, or Bobby Three Sticks, as his agents call him. He's sort of the last of the liberal Republicans, the Lindsay Republicans. So he takes office on 4 September 2001. All hell breaks loose a week later. The FBI becomes the recipient of this huge, completely illegal, global electronic eavesdropping program that President George W. Bush set up after 9/11, codenamed Stellar Wind. He turns the powers, okay, the FBI has been wiretapping, bugging, eavesdropping since there were wires to tap. Okay, back in the early 20th century. But in the early 21st century, you've got the National Security Agency, which you can basically, if the telecommunications companies allow it to, Verizon, and, you know, various Bells, and Quest, and the telecoms, and Microsoft, and Google allow it to do so, which they did, with one exception, Quest. Build trapdoors into the telecommunications and computer servers in the United States. Okay, they can read, they have the capacity to read, or at least look at, every email, every cell phone call, and every internet service provider URL in the world. If you send an email from Beijing to Karachi, it's going to be routed for a millisecond through a server in California or Texas. And the NSA can capture that. And capture they did. Billions and billions and billions of gigabytes and terabytes of information, and they put it all on the FBI's lap and said, you sort it out. These became known as the pizza boy leads. Because 99% of the tips about terrorism wound up at Domino's Pizza. Okay. It was like trying to get a drink of water out of a fire hose. Okay. But after 2 years of this deluge, Robert Swan Mueller III determines that nobody has cleared these procedures with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, whose existence we would partly credit for Schwartz and the Church Committee. Go back. Right after Watergate, the Supreme Court, in the Keith decision, says you cannot do warrantless electronic surveillance in this country unless you get a warrant, or unless it is in the name of foreign counterintelligence against espionage agents. So we struggled with that through the 70s, through the Church Committee, and we finally set up a rule of law in this country on how the government can spy on people in this country. You get a warrant from a secret panel of federal judges that sits on the top of the Justice Department, the lead-lined chamber. I believe until 9/11 there were roughly 18,000 applications for warrants for electronic surveillance. They turned down one. Okay, so it's okay. Just do get a freaking warrant. Okay, that's what the Fourth Amendment says, right? Unreasonable searches and seizures are general warrants to break into your house and steal your stuff. That's why we fought a revolution against the British and their mad king to protect our people, our citizens, against the power of a king. So George Bush thinks he's the king after 9/11. Okay, let's accept the idea that a man's home is his castle, but nobody can protect a castle against the king, and I'm the king. So George Bush thought, until Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, God bless him, confronts him in the Oval Office, one-on-one, in the spring of 2004. And we know what happened because Mueller took contemporaneous notes, and Bush didn't tape himself, nor is the pity, but he put this in his memoir, and the accounts mesh perfectly. And Mueller says, Mr. President, this program of, you know, the National Security Agency, wiretapping, bugging, electronic eavesdropping on Americans without a warrant, is illegal. There are several key aspects of it that are illegal. And unless you scan it back and get it back within the law, within the boundaries of the law, within the rule of law, I will resign. And he's got a letter of resignation handwritten in his pocket. Bush, what does Bush do? He writes in his memoir that visions of the Saturday Night Massacre dance through his head. Okay, where Nixon had to fire the Attorney General and the next Attorney General, and finally he got Rehnquist. Bork. The takeover. Thank you. What's the headline the next day? FBI director resigns. Reasons unstated. Secrecy cited. What's the next question? What the hell is the President of the United States doing that's so secret that the head of the FBI just resigned? So anyway, Bush backed down. And the Supreme Court later ruled in 2006, in the immortal words of Sandra Day O'Connor, The state of war does not make the commander-in-chief the king. So here we are in this tug of war that Alexander Hamilton foresaw in 1787. National security, civil liberties. Safety, liberty. We want to be safe. We want to be free. And the genius of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is that every time the president goes beyond the rule of law, or the FBI goes beyond the rule of law, something pulls back. Whether it's the court or the press, which is in about as his poor shape as the court these days, but that's another story. Or, you know, blind chance and fate, secret spill, the rule of law pulls back, and we get back on the keel. It matters who's president. It matters who the head of the FBI is. We happen to have a president who understands the Constitution right now, unlike his predecessor. And we have a guy running the FBI who respects the rule of law. Now, does the FBI bend the law? Yes, all the time. When it gets caught, will it try to calibrate the balance between liberty and security? Yes. Mueller has said more than once, I'm not going to be the guy who, when he resigns, they have a medal around my head, neck. Say, congratulations, you won the war on terror, but you lost our civil liberties. I'm not going to be that guy. So there is hope. You know, if we have a president who respects the Constitution, we have an FBI that understands the rule of law, we can do this. We can be both safe and free. That's my hope.
So that's my answer.